Whatever the adventure, there's a BMW engineered to take it on. The X3 delivers a striking design with agile performance. The 100% electric i4 packed with pure electric energy. Or the plug-in hybrid X5, an impressive, versatile SUV granting full control on every journey. Choose what powers your next adventure during the BMW Road Home Sales Event. BMW, the ultimate driving machine.
Hurry in for exceptional offers through December 2nd. Visit BMWUSA.com for details. It's better
over here. After investing billions to light up our network, T-Mobile is America's largest 5G network. Plus, right now, you can switch, keep your phone, and we'll pay it off up to $800. See how you can save on every plan versus Verizon and AT&T at T-Mobile.com/keep and switch.
Up to 4 lines via virtual prepaid card. Allow 15 days. Qualifying unlocked device, credit, service, ported 90 plus days with device and eligible carrier and timely redemption required. Card has no cash access and expires in 6 months.
This is Computer Talk with Tab, hosted by Eric Semmel of Tab Computer Systems. Interact with Eric and his guest by phone at 522-WTIC or 1-800-966-WTIC. Email them in the studio at gethelp@tabinc.com or get help anytime at computertalkwithtab.com. Now, here's Eric.
And good morning. This is Computer Talk with Tab. I'm Eric.
And I'm Bob.
And Bob is Bob Shorey. He's one of the MCSEs at Tab. He comes in and helps me out with your computer problems, comments, questions, and concerns. Feel free to get online, 800-966-WTIC, 522-WTIC. I know it's like the only sunny day we've had in weeks, so you're probably out doing anything. But if you're in the car making a dump run or going to pick up some stuff for the yard and you have a computer question, feel free to give us a ring. And we're here till we start at 9, as you can hear, but everyone calls in at 10:30. So the lines are usually open a lot easier at 9 in the morning than versus the 10 o'clock hour. If you want to get online, it's a good time to do it. So as usual and customary, we do have some news. And if you're in the accounting world, if you're a CPA, you dodged a bullet this week. If you use the tax software CCH Access and you use their cloud-based system, whereas you decided to rent the software from CCH in perpetuity rather than buy a server for your local practice, you've been down for a week. Now, just imagine if this happened April 10th rather than when it happened Monday. You guys would have been pulling your hair out worse than you were anyways dealing with the new tax laws. But the folks over there at Wolters Kluwer, which are out of the Netherlands, have a cloud-based CCH Access cloud system that was down for a week.
A week?
Yep, thanks to malware and ransomware that happened to the cloud provider. Now, I know some sales guy told you that couldn't happen because they're SOC 2 compliant data centers, so secure. Guys, the cloud is just somebody else's servers, and you were the victim of them being tricked into clicking on an email through a phishing scam. And clearly, they don't have any security awareness training over there at CCH, because their own people infected the network that runs your tax program. So, of course, if you did have CCH on a local server, you were not impacted. You were not impacted at all. And the only time you would be impacted is if you used the local CCH but still use some of their cloud electronic payment or filing systems, which some people do. So you may want to not put all your eggs in the one basket there and use a different method to do your electronic filing because clearly these guys have issues managing their cloud. The funny thing is I have clients, we of course have many of CPA clients, that were then sending me emails that they were getting from Thomson Reuters. Thomson Reuters is another tax package. And they're getting emails from these guys. We do cloud better than these guys. Come on over to us. It's like, oh, you do cloud better, huh? They also, all these companies have a local server-based software. So really what they should be saying is, well, the cloud could be good for some, but local could be good for others. And if you don't want to get impacted like thousands of others at the same time, bring your software on-prem. It's as simple as that. Even in our world, the IT world, there's a product that we use called ConnectWise. That service, IT companies like us can choose to run that product on-prem, on their own servers, or in the cloud. Well, guess what? ConnectWise was down in the cloud if you used the cloud service. Of course, you can probably guess we have it on premise. We were not impacted.
We have our private cloud.
Our own private servers. Why? Because we're geeks and we know how to spin up a server. It's not as hard. For those geeks who figure they'll throw it in the cloud, they were down and had to actually support their customers using Excel spreadsheets.
So what do you do when you get that $1 million contract and you say, well, we can't help you right now because our servers are down. Oh, but this is important. I guess I'll have to put it in with your competitor who's not in the cloud.
Exactly. It's so funny. So we'll put a link up here for you. I'm sure if you're in the accounting world and had the CCH program in the cloud, you know exactly about what I'm talking about. But I'll put a link up here. You can read the story. Brian Krebs had a great article about it. I'll put that link up there for you as well. So, Bob, what do you want to talk about?
Oh, I got lots of stuff.
Yeah.
Britain just went a week without using any coal power.
Really?
Oh, yeah.
Hmm.
So, finally, some good energy-related news, according to CNET.
All right.
I have to qualify that.
You never know. Sure.
Yeah. Britain took a break from coal power. In April of 2017, Britain went its first day without coal since the Industrial Revolution. Wow. On Wednesday, Britain did one better. The island nation went a full week without using coal power.
Nice.
The National Grid Electricity System Operator, which runs the electricity grid in England, Scotland, mm-hmm. and Wales, yeah. broke the news via Twitter on Wednesday. Mm-hmm. This is the first time since the original coal power station launched back in 1882, the account said.
Nice.
The UK government has previously pledged to remove coal power from its grid by 2025. That's not very far away.
No.
Fintan Style, National Director Grid, said in a tweet that coal-free week is proof of renewable energy's power.
Mm-hmm.
And there's more in this thing. And
Yeah. Well, renewable energy is great.
In 2015, Britain's carbon dioxide emissions amounted to 389.75 million tons, according to the World Atlas,
mm-hmm.
placing it as the world's 15th biggest emitter. Number one on the chart is China with 904 billion tons.
Yikes.
So, yeah.
All right. Well, so they're doing well there in Britain. They went a week without coal. Good for them. That's great. Actually, after the show last week, I went home and started, doing some yard work, mow the lawn, and these guys, Hawk and Solar, come up to my house. And I just kept thinking to myself, they want to offer me free solar. As long as my credit score was good and my house wasn't in foreclosure, they would offer me free solar. I'm thinking, why are they coming to my house selling me solar like they're selling encyclopedias or they're selling a vacuum? If it's such a great idea for free solar, why do I need people literally hawking it that way? And it's free. Then I want to make sure, though, that my credit is good and my house isn't in foreclosure. If it's free, you'd think those are the people you want to help the most. Those people who have bad credit and don't have a house in foreclosure, they really could use the benefit of solar because, right, they don't want to have that power bill.
They don't have that bill.
Yeah,
which
but no.
has been going up quite a bit lately.
Yeah, well, actually went down. The generation charge is going to go down. But the point is, why would you need to go door to door like you're selling Girl Scout cookies if solar is such a good idea? And this is to push free solar, which, of course, we all know wasn't going to be free. Obviously, you wouldn't ask me for my credit score.
If you generate more electricity than you produce,
yeah.
you don't get a check.
Well,
they
get the check. Yeah, probably. It was some sort of, I'm sure, lease agreement. But I just found it pretty funny. In other news, here in the Big Apple, there's some residents that weren't too happy with their apartment because basically they were forced to use an app to get in the front door. And they didn't like the fact that the owners would pretty much know if they're coming or going. And they were like, look, I just want a key. Old-fashioned key, so I can open and close the door the old-fashioned way without any kind of, Rube Goldberg approach to opening a door.
Oh, God forbid. That'd be like using cash.
I know. It's interesting. We can talk about cash, too. But this lady had lived in the building for 43 years, and now she needs to get a smartphone and have it connect via Bluetooth so that she can swipe in to get in the door. They sued the landlords and won. And they'll be able to get keys. The fact that you have to sue your landlord to get a key, I just found that kind of funny. But I'll put the link up here.
Well,
you can read.
Keys are so expensive.
And so
the lawyer's a cheaper.
I guess so. We'll put a link up here for you. You can read about it. But we don't, I mean, obviously, it's neat to be able to open a door with your smartphone as long as you have a connection to the cloud and you're paying T-Mobile or whatever you're using.
And the cloud doesn't go down.
Their internet's up and the door's talking to their internet. Their switches are up. Their routers are working. And you have six IT guys and then the door will open versus the old-fashioned key, which is click. I mean, that's pretty easy.
Have a power outage, you can't get into your house, or you can't get out.
Well, you remember those videos you saw with the kids trying to figure out how an old rotary phone worked? It was a pretty popular video.
I didn't see that one.
It was showing like 15-year-old kids. He plopped a rotary phone on a table and said, figure out how to make a call. And it took him like 5 minutes. Just imagine we have a key. You're like, what do you do with this key? I only swipe. I don't know, open the door. I have to use my phone. So I'll put a link up here for you. What else you got, Bob, before we go to a break?
Germany's first e-highway allows electrified trucks to operate emissions-free.
Well, they're electrified, so somehow they're making
Well, you know
power.
How we have the electric trains that run through, you know, New York and Boston and all of that?
Yeah.
Well, they kind of put these things up, these wires up there.
Yeah.
And so they have these pantographs, they're called, that go up from the truck and touch the wires, just like those
bumper cars at the carnival,
kind of like bumper cars or the trains. It looks more like the trains.
Yep.
So the project came to be with the help of Siemens, which is a German company, which has put its tech to use in other cities already.
Yep.
Many of us have come across a train or bus that takes advantage of overhead power lines, pantographs stretched upwards, providing the vehicle in question with electricity needs.
Nice.
Needed to continue on the first e-highways in Germany to help electrified trucks roll down the highway without contributing to air pollution. The German state of Hesse, H-E-S-S-E,
yeah,
I don't know if it's Hesse or Hesse, on Tuesday opened its first stretch of e-highway featuring overhead power lines meant to deliver charge to electrified trucks as they travel.
So this is like the equivalent of our busway, only it's being used.
It's still in the pilot phase, okay? And they got a 6 mile stretch.
6 miles.
And basically what they're doing is they're recharging the batteries on hybrid trucks because there's not enough of this to actually go from A to B, so to speak.
Right, it's only 6 miles.
But this is a test. This is a pilot project.
All right.
So it'll be there until 2022, at which point the German government will determine whether to expand the project scope. So that means that since the government's paying for it, money is no object.
No object, yep.
So, yeah. And
all right.
Yeah, it's kind of interesting. And they said it's not realistic
to
put them on an automobile.
Well, that'd be a big...
The pantographs would be too tall.
Yeah.
It would probably...
Well, you have to use one of those things they use in bumper cars, right? Stick it up a straight pole and have it dragging across the...
Yeah, and it'd be like trying to get out the door where they have those poles where you're not allowed to take the carts out of the store. So if you try to go, the pole stops
you. It bangs you. Yeah, exactly. Yeah, well, we'll see what happens. That's great. Germany and 6 miles of highway.
We'll put up
I wonder how much that. 6 miles of highway cost. They tell you?
Well, you know, here, what's a mile of highway cost?
Here.
How many millions? And then you add the electrification to that.
Forget it.
You know, and then cars have to stay out of that lane.
Yeah, it's insane. All right, Bob, thanks for that. We're going to take a quick break. We got three lines filled up. Bruce, Gary, and Jim, hang on. One line open for you, 800-966-WTIC, 522-WTIC. We'll be right back. And we are back. This is Computer Talk with Tab. I'm Eric.
And I'm Bob.
And we have two lines open for you. We just lost a call, 800-966-WTIC, 522-WTIC. Let's get right to your calls. We're going to go to Bruce in Torrington first. Hey, Bruce, what's up?
Good morning, guys.
Good morning.
I just got a question.
Yeah.
About 13 years ago, my daughter-in-law gave me one of these little keychains with little digital photos of my granddaughters.
Nice.
I happened to find it the other day, charge it up, and it's great. I wanted to take these... download them. So I found a company in Torrington. They were able to download the pictures on a stick.
Mm-hmm.
But the person said, you know, when you blow these up, they might become, was it pixelated? Did it kind of fall apart?
Yeah, because they're not high res enough for you.
Right. Well, I went up to Walmart to do the photograph thing, and on the screen they came up great, but when I went to print them, of course, they became fuzzy.
Mm-hmm.
Is there a program or a company that can actually take that and restore those to like 4x5s or whatever?
I'm going to say probably not, but I could be wrong.
Okay.
Only because if you've listened to our digital camera show, which we're going to have on the 18th, I think, this month, we have an expert that's going to come in. He's going to talk about when people take pictures in RAW, those pictures are very large and dense, right? They're full. They have all the information about the picture. But when somebody shrinks it, maybe to put it on a website or what have you, those pixels are now gone, and that data is gone. You really can't, that I would guess, restore them the way you're thinking, because the information's not there. Now, like I said, I could be wrong. Maybe there is a way for a program to do that, and I'll throw that out to the listeners, and we have a lot of great professional photographers that listen to, and I'll get on the email and see if they have anything to say about it. But I don't think there's a way to add data back.
It's kind of a bizarre attempt to it. May work, but it probably won't be like crystal clear. I can bring them up on my computer. Of course, they're small, and I can bring them up a little bit. And then I was wondering if I could get my computer camera and get really close, take a snapshot, and then see if I could do something. But still, that wouldn't work either, because then I'm just kind of blown it to pieces.
I don't know. That does seem to have some merit to it, but I don't think I would do it on my computer screen. I think I would try to print it and then take it like a macro picture, like you're taking a picture of a flower, right? Something really small. Put your camera in is it macro or micro? I don't know which way you set it, but you're going to set it so that you're taking a picture of something very small, but you're going to take it with all the pixels, right?
Got it.
All the data. Yeah. And I think you could be onto something, Bruce. That could be a way of doing it.
Okay. Well, you know what? I'm going to try it. If it works, I'll call you guys back.
yeah. And we'll follow our email to see if anybody has any thoughts on it, too. But that might work.
Okay. We'll give it a shot.
All right. Good luck.
Thanks, guys. Hey, you have a great show.
Oh, thank you.
You're welcome.
All right. We're going to be here till 11 o'clock. So feel free to get online. Three lines open for you. 800-966-WTIC, 522-WTIC. Jim and Agawam, hang on. Everything we talk about will be posted live over at ComputerTalkWithTab.com. That's the name of the show.com, which also works. If you go to Facebook and you like us on Facebook, and Mark Zuckerberg deems the news worthy, and these days, I don't know, there's a lot of these internet companies like Twitter and Facebook that are deeming all sorts of things unworthy. So we'll see if our stuff gets through. It'll go to your Facebook feed. And, of course, if you like us on Twitter, and we haven't been banned for anything, thankfully, so far. If you like us on Twitter over at Tab Computer Sys, it'll get into your news feed there. We'll be right back. Back. This is Computer Talk with Tab. We're here till 11 o'clock. Two lines open for you, 800-966-WTIC, 522-WTIC. We have Carol and Jim on the line. Let's go to Jim, who's been on the line the longest. Hey, Jim.
Good morning, gentlemen.
Morning.
I have an HP 5 all-in-one printer.
Nice.
That I've had since I got rid of my abacus and went to a computer setting.
Hmm.
For some reason or other, I decided to get a new one. Wireless printer.
Right.
I got the printer, and it works great, except for it now has a wonderful feature where after it's been on for 8 hours, it shuts itself off totally.
Okay.
And I have to go over and press the button to turn it back on, which it works okay.
Uh-huh.
If I don't go over and manually turn it off and turn it on, the computer, it cannot find the computer.
Right.
Computer can't find it.
Yeah.
So something is not connecting right. And I'm wondering if it is my computer.
No.
The way I've got it set up. And I've worked with HP service with 5 1-hour telephone calls to
what?
The Philippines.
How much did that cost you?
It didn't cost me anything.
Oh, good.
But since I paid $110 for the printer, HP didn't make anything on me.
Not yet.
Anyway,
it's the ink they're going to make all the money on.
We both. It's the ink. Yeah. They gave up on me, or I gave up on them.
Are you kidding me? They couldn't figure it out in 5 hours.
No.
Bob and I know what it is right now.
No, let me finish now.
I don't even need to let you finish. We know what it is.
Oh,
we have the answer.
I got a different way. I'm thinking it's the way I have my computer set up.
It's not.
And what it is, my modem My Comcast modem is in the other room.
Yeah.
It's 2 feet away from the printer.
Uh-huh.
My computer is out in the kitchen.
Yeah.
And now I'm far enough so that the improved modem from Costco doesn't go as far as the old one.
Yeah.
So I use an Ethernet cable from the laptop to the modem.
Yeah. No, it's nothing to do with any of that, Jim.
Oh, okay.
Right. So basically, the issue is the folks in the Philippines don't understand IP addresses. Every little device on your network gets an address every time it connects to the network. It gets it from your DHCP server. In your case,
yeah,
your DHCP server is your router. Okay, that device that is handing out IP addresses. So when people walk in your house and say, hey, Jim, what's the Wi-Fi password? When they put the password in, the router says, oh, okay, I'll give this little IP address to Eric's phone, and now he can go ahead and surf on Jim's internet. It works that way for every device on your network. What's happening to you is the printer is not getting the same address. So, like, if you got a friend that moved and you wanted to send him a letter and you didn't know the new address, it's not going to get to the right place, right? So, in your case, you need to set what's called a reservation on your DHCP server for your printer. So what you need to do is set a static IP address on your Wi-Fi printer of 192.168.1.20. Whatever you want to call it, whatever one you want to pick. And then you have to go into the router and tell the router not to give out 20 to anybody else. It's a reserved IP address because you've told the printer, I'm going to set you to 20, and you're going to tell the DHCP device to not give out 20 to anybody else. Now, when that little sucker comes on, it's going to be always at the same spot. If you don't do that, your computer's like, where did it go? I knew he was at 20 yesterday, but now he's at, I don't know where he went. And the Philippines, in 5 hours, couldn't figure this out.
They did talk about a static. That terminology came up.
Yeah.
And that was about in the middle of it, about two telephone calls back. And each time we'd do it, I let it go through its cycle of shutting itself off and then trying to come back on again.
Well, that's fine, but the static address you have to set on the printer is only half the battle. It's your DHCP server side is the other half.
Ah, that's what it is.
Yes, sir.
Oh, boy.
And there probably was a language barrier and all that fun stuff.
No, they were. Their English was great.
No.
Absolutely perfect.
All
and
right.
they took over my computer. You know how you can watch them do it.
Yeah.
I don't remember them going into the router.
No, they probably did not.
I would have seen that, but that could be it.
No, that is it.
The worst part of it is when I look at the reviews, which I did after I brought the printer. I should have done it before.
Yeah.
Between 20% and 30% have a very poor review on the printers, and I don't know how anybody can stay in business with that quantity of upset customers.
Mm. Well, it could be again. You know, it depends on what the reviews are. Take a look at what they have to say. If it has to do with wireless printing and not knowing how to set that up, that's like me not knowing how to change the oil in my car. You wouldn't want me to do that either. The engine would seize.
My old printer, which is always on,
yeah,
it goes into a sleep mode, but it's on, in a basic on mode, always has the same thing, so it doesn't have a problem.
So when yours shuts down, the odds are your router is giving it an IP address that expires in 8 hours.
Right.
So unless you're using your printer more frequently than every 8 hours,
right,
it's not going to keep that same IP address.
Yeah.
And then the other thing is, more than likely, if you have installed all the complete software suite, there should be a discovery module in your HP package somewhere under the HP menu.
Mm-hmm.
That gives you the ability to go out and rediscover the IP address for your HP printer.
All right, so after you pick an IP address, you're going to need to reset up the printer so that it sees it, like Bob's saying, and then go to DHCP and say, hey, DHCP server, don't give out this address. And that's all you got to do.
Oh, boy, it sounds so easy. But, well,
hey,
anyway,
what?
They
but
took
Jim,
the printer back, and I got all my money back.
So. They took it back?
Yes, they did.
Oh, you're just calling. This is just a purely.
Because it's bothering the daylights out of me.
Gotcha.
And you guys have been just fantastic for me.
All right.
So I'm going to do a little diddling around to see if I can find those points that you're talking about.
Well, while you're in the firewall messing around with your DHCP server, set up OpenDNS as your DNS addresses, please.
I got to do that. You tell me every weekend to do it, and I don't do it.
Well, if you're going to be in there now messing with static IP addresses, the least you can do is protect yourself from the wild, wild west of the internet by putting in OpenDNS settings for the DNS settings. Don't leave them as obtain. Put in the addresses, and Bob will give them to you right now.
208.67.222.222 as your primary, and the secondary is 208.
I can't copy that fast.
It's okay. We have a podcast.
208.67.220.220.
Yeah, and we'll put a link up to how to do it. It's probably there from last week, too.
Okay.
But if you're going to go in there, Jim, that's what you got to do, sir.
Fantastic. Gentlemen, again, many times, thank you.
You're welcome, sir.
Bye.
Bye-bye. Yep, it's always half the battle when it comes to these configurations, IP addresses. It's key. We're going to be here till 11 o'clock. I got two lines open for you, 800-966-WTIC, 522-WTIC. We got Carol's got an answer for the resolution on the picture, and Sarah on the line. Two lines open for you. We'll be right back. Back. This is Computer Talk with Tab. I'm Eric.
And I'm Bob.
And we're here till 11 o'clock. Feel free to get online. And let's go right to your calls. You got Carol on the cell who might have an answer for our first caller. Hey, Carol.
Hi, how are you?
Good, how are you?
Good. I called, I'm driving, so hopefully I don't have to stop. I called a couple weeks ago with a Photoshop answer. So on the low resolution picture, here's a little trick I discovered quite by accident.
All right.
So in either Photoshop Elements or Photoshop CC, which you can get a trial version for 30 days for free.
Yep.
In Photoshop, you open up your low-res picture, and you also make a new file, which is high-res. So if you want the 4x6 at 300 pixels per inch,
yep,
or 8.5x11 at 300 ppi, whatever, you make the new file that's high-res, and then you drag the low-res picture onto the high-res file,
mm-hmm,
and now it's going to appear very tiny, but it's going to have little handles on the four corners.
Yeah.
And you're going to grab one of those handles and click and drag it while holding down the shift key. And you can make that low-res picture bigger, and it will be better resolution. It still won't be perfect, but it's going to be certainly good enough to do a 4x6 print. It's beautiful.
Okay. Well, thank you very much. I appreciate the feedback, Carol.
You're welcome.
All right. Have a good one. So there's a way to do it. You're going to take the data you've got and try to trick it into being high res. That's pretty cool.
Well, it does emulation. You know, it kind of fills in.
Maybe. Yeah. So, all right. That's where, I don't do this stuff on a daily basis, so I have no idea. Let's go to Sarah in Meriden next. Hey, Sarah, what's up?
Okay, here's my question.
Yeah.
I just switched from Frontier to Cox because they raised my internet price.
Frontier did?
Yes.
All right.
So I went based on what they told me.
Mm-hmm.
I have 100 meg.
Okay.
Which I think maybe is too much and I could live with 30.
You could.
But I don't know how to tell.
Well, is it just you?
Yes.
Well, the best way to tell is to call Cox and say, what would be the discount to go to 30? And then they'll say, okay, it's going to cost you this much less. Say, I want that, and then run for a few days, and that's how you tell. But by default, if it's just you, surfing, streaming, you don't have any TV with them, right? Just internet?
Right.
I bet you 30 megabits is more than you need, Sarah.
Okay, that would be good.
Yeah, you're probably, is there a price difference?
$20 a month.
So what are you paying now for the 100?
$70.69.
All right, so it's some sort of introductory rate there they're giving
you.
Okay. So, yeah, you're going to save that money, have them reduce it, and I'm sure you'll be fine on 30 megabits. You'll be happy as a clam.
Okay. Now, my second question is, I've been looking into replacing their Wi-Fi modem.
Yeah.
And I've talked to them, and I've talked to Staples,
mm-hmm,
and they're telling me that in order to get what I have now, whatever that means,
uh-huh,
it's about almost $200. And that just seems kind of, that seems ridiculous to me.
So when they say what you have now, do you have a phone line through it too?
No.
Okay, so it's just internet.
It's just internet.
Yeah, so you'll need a modem. And those cost, what, $39, $40?
$40.
So you need a modem that works with Cox, and Staples has those. And then you need what's called a Wi-Fi router. And yes, a Wi-Fi router can cost you about $150. But if you look at the monthly rental on the Cox router, which is probably $10 a month, it'll pay for itself rather quickly.
Yeah, no, I could see that. But what they have, I have 985 square feet, so I don't have a lot of space, for gadgets. And what I have now is called a Wi-Fi panoramic modem. It's like all in one. I don't have two separate things.
Right. You don't need that. You would return that back to Cox and get your rental fee back. Buy a separate modem for, like I said, $40, and buy a wireless router for like $150. And so for $200, you'll be more than happy with your coverage.
But don't they make modems I could buy that are like this all in one?
They might. They might make a router that has a Cox capable modem built in. I like separating them only because I like to reboot one device rather than the whole system. But that's just me. You could check that out. I'll do some research too to see as well.
That's what I've been asking for, and I thought, well, maybe I'm saying it wrong, and that's why they're telling me they're so expensive.
They could be. Yeah. My approach is, I think, a nice, straightforward, simple one where you've got a modem and then a router.
Okay.
And in your 900 square feet, you'll do fine with a Linksys 1900 ACS will do great for you.
Okay.
But I'll check and see if there's anything that's a combination device for you. But if you look at your monthly cost for that modem you're renting to Cox, you're going to easily get paid back.
Oh, yeah.
Fast.
I think it's $11 a month.
Wow.
I think it's 11 and change a month.
Mm-hmm. And then be careful.
Yes, I can see it over time justifying.
Yeah, before you know it, you'll have the Arrow Simowitz tax on it of some kind.
Yeah, exactly.
So that'll be coming.
And they'll probably have a toll every time I drive over there.
Yeah, exactly. So, anything you can do to reduce anything with your Cox bill would be a good thing.
Okay. Well, thank you very much. I appreciate it.
You got it, Sarah. And if we can find a combination device, we'll post it. Otherwise, we'll post two separate devices.
Okay.
All right.
Thanks again.
You're welcome. Good luck.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. All right. Let's move on to Paul on the cell. He's been on the longest. Hey, Paul.
Good morning. Wireless printing.
Yeah.
I downloaded all the drivers for my printer. I got everything all set up. And when I try and print wirelessly, I get an error message on my screen saying that the printer is not connected or it's not on or something, but it is, it is powered up. The little wireless blue light is on.
Yep. It's like deja vu all over again here.
Yes. Yeah. Well, yeah, I was listening to the other guys. So, see, that sounds like it, but is it the same thing?
Yeah, well, probably, Paul. Most likely your computer is wondering where your printer went. It doesn't see it anymore because it's got a different IP address. So the computer's like, okay, tell me where the printer is, Paul. So you could do what Bob said, right? Try to do a search with the tool if it's an HP, right, Bob?
Yeah, HP. A lot of the others also have a discovery tool.
So you can go ahead and have the discovery tool go out and say, okay, where is the printer this time? And it'll try to find whatever IP address it found it on, and then your printing will work again. Or you go and set a static IP address on that printer, all right? 192.168.1.20, let's say. And then you go to your DHCP server, which is probably your router, and set that area as reserved, so it can't give out those IP addresses anymore.
Okay, thank you.
You got it, Paul.
Have a good day.
You too. Bye-bye. It's a big problem with wireless. It's a big problem. The reason it works better with wired is it just seems to be more of a long-term connection. They seem to respond better.
Well, it's permanent. But yeah. You see, the way DHCP works is, let's say the default on your router renews it every 8 hours.
Right, the lease on the IP address.
Yep, so the lease on the IP address is 8 hours. Well, when it hits 50%, it tries to renew. So after 4 hours, it tries to renew.
Right, so it's just say, hey, I would like to use this IP address. Is that okay? And the DHCP server says, or yeah.
So then at 6 hours, if it hasn't renewed, it tries to renew again.
Yeah.
Then it tries to renew at 7 hours, and then it tries to renew at 8 hours.
Yep.
And if it doesn't get a reply and say, yeah, I'll take the IP address back,
right,
then it drops it.
Right.
So the next time it comes back out of sleep or off mode or whatever, then it asks for an IP. It says,
when you
oh.
say asking, it's the DHCP server asking the device, would you like to this lease to continue? Not the device asking the DHCP server.
It wants to renew the lease.
Right.
But once the release has expired, the full 8 hours.
Right. Forget
it. Or it could be 24 hours. But the point is, once it's completely gone, it goes out of the database. So right. the next time the printer requests an IP.
It could be a different one.
The router's saying, oh, you're a new device.
Right.
Because you're not in my database, so I'm going to give you a new IP.
And it could be the same one. You could get lucky.
It could. Mm-hmm.
Or it won't be the same one. And then all of a sudden, your printer is going to be like, your computer is going to be like, where'd that printer go? I knew he was over here, but he's not anymore. Let's go to John in the cell. Hey, John, what's up?
Hey, how's it going?
Good.
I have like a 3-year-old laptop that I bought, and I used it, and you know, I don't use it very often, mostly for like trade shows when I go for work.
Yeah.
And last time I used it was January. I plugged it in, went to go power it up, and nothing.
Oh, boy.
No lights, no nothing.
Have you removed the battery?
I have not. That's why I figured I'd call you guys and you know, see if there's any, if it's just a paperweight now.
Or... No. I don't think so.
Depends on what kind of laptop it is. Is the battery removable?
Yeah.
It's a Dell.
Yeah. Check to see if the battery is removable. And then I would have you remove the battery, right? And then you want to turn the power button on without the battery being in there. And that'll discharge any juice at all.
And with the power brick disconnected also.
Yeah, power brick disconnected. And then re-put the battery back in and then try to charge it or try to turn it on with it plugged in.
Actually, I would just plug the power brick in with the battery out.
Oh, sure. Yep.
And see if the light indicating that it has power comes on.
Right. Are you even getting the light now, John, or no?
Nothing,
yes.
Absolutely nothing.
Pull that battery out and try it without.
Okay.
And if you get some power, if that light comes on with the battery out, it could be a bad battery. The battery needs to be replaced.
All right.
If it does come on, then try to charge the battery again. Just might need to be reseated. All right.
I'll give it a try. Thanks.
Yeah, you're welcome. Good luck.
Bye.
Bye-bye. It's not a paperweight yet. We're going to be here till 11 o'clock. Feel free to get online. We're going to have four lines wide open. Feel free to get online over the news, 800-966-WTIC, 522-WTIC. If you've had those guys knocking on your door, giving you free solar, I was just wondering, was it free? How did that work out for you? After they sold you the encyclopedia, was it still free? I'd love to hear that story. 800-966-WTIC, 522-WTIC. Everything's posted live by Mike G over at ComputerTalkWithTab.com. It's the name of the show.com. You can also download us on the podcast over at radio.com. You can listen to us anywhere in the country, anytime. You can listen to us through Waze now, through the podcast, while you're driving to work. No, Joy wouldn't like that. You can't listen to Ray and Joe. We'll be right back.